Manager in so IT Consulting and CISA. Then I saw Sol and Gabani. Sol was CISA then until the end of May, June, July. And then of course Sol is at the moment a consultant, but they're helping out as a home affairs where he's a very good IT skills up to use to help the former CEO of CISA over there. Then the Tanya Abraham, she's from CISA, Cape Town office, and she's our liaison officer here. Myself, I'm a non-executive board member of CISA, and I've been seconded to head up CISA while we're searching for the CEO. And I'll talk about some of that as well, because there's a lot of that in the press at the moment. If you've seen the ITWeb online publication yesterday. So I'm Peter Pedler, for those of you who don't know me, but I have attended some of the sessions here already, and I'm not new to Parliament. I've previously been at the Department of Science and Technology as a DDG there. So those engagements have helped me a great deal to be able to address the knowledge at this level as well. Thank you very much. And once again, I also would like to just extend my apologies that you didn't get the document on time. We certainly, and I'm glad that you mentioned, Chair, that it's not been the practice of CISA to be late. I am certainly not very happy that the documents were not circulated to you on time. It's also the first time in my life that has happened in the 5 years or so that I've spent in government. So it's something I've taken correction internally to make sure this doesn't happen again. And as far as the presentation is concerned, you'll see we've done it in three phases. First of all, I'm going to give you an update on CISA, which I think is very important. The second one, Paul will then talk about all the various memoranda of understanding that we have with countries as well as with other parties inside South Africa. And then we'll also do an update on the cybercrime conference and perhaps do a small lesson in internet and network and so forth, how these things work, and how some of the hacking happens that take place. So it's going to be very interactive, some of the stuff that you're doing. And I hope you'll be able to derive a lot of insight into what's happening in the world of IT. And also understand a bit what is happening in the CISA environment. It's my first time being at this portfolio committee. So, you know, when one attends a lot of portfolio committee meetings, one gets a sense of the members and the type of questions that they want to ask you. So my team and myself is coming completely cold, and we welcome all the questions that you'd like to fire at us. They can be, of course, I'm used to getting very difficult questions from portfolio committee members. We're happy to answer them with the best of our abilities. And if you don't have the answers, we are going to make sure that we feed them back to you and find the answers, because it's important that we establish a very good rapport over the portfolio committee. And from CISA's side, I just want to tell you that I heard you mention something about training. If any one time you'd like us to show you even our facilities as part of the training environment, we'd be very happy to do that as well, because we've got sites all around the country, and I know portfolio members come from all over the country. And certainly if you're in the facility of any of our entities or branches, by all means, feel free to contact us so they can give you a site for that. You've got very good printing facilities right here in Cape Town, and you'll be surprised about some of the stuff that you're doing there. As I said, I'm pretty new to the portfolio committee, and if you've done these things in the past and you don't want to do it, it's up to you. But we certainly would like to engage with you at all levels and at all times, everywhere at your disposal. Normally what I do is I also put my telephone number on the screen. Today we haven't done that, but if you want my contact details, Tanya is in touch with you, and certainly you can have that as well, because I would like to be the first one to know if anything goes wrong in CISA, but I would also like to know if things go right in CISA. So that two-way communication, I think, is very important that we establish that. Having said that, let me get into the swing of things and talk to you about some of the updates as far as CISA is concerned. I just mentioned in my introduction as well that Mabuto, the longest serving previous CEO of CETA, after 3 years, was asked to first head up the Department of Home Affairs. Mabuto was supposed to stay with us until the end of September. And that was the agreement that we had with him. And I'm mentioning this specifically because I've seen in the press the speculation that Mabuto left suddenly. He didn't leave suddenly. We had him contracted until the end of September, and we had an agreement with him to make sure that the contract and the structure that he had put in place must be bedded down before he can move on. He had very lucrative offers from the private sector, but true to form, when National Beauty called, he heeded that call to go and head up a very challenging environment called the Department of Home Affairs. And as a result of that call that he got, we had to make contingency plans immediately because we were not going to stand in the way of our political masters if they requested Mabuto's skills in the troubled environment of Home Affairs. So we as a board decided that we will relieve Mabuto, and because I head up my own consultancy, and according to the board, I have most of the free time available, they asked me to go and head up CETA while we're searching for a CEO. And my being there, but I just want to emphatically say that everything is on track to fill the post. Interviews have been held, and the decision is currently with the minister. And it, the minister, whenever she gets the cabinet member together, it will come to cabinet to make sure that the appointment is then ratified. So that is as far as that process is concerned. So I just want to once again just emphasize that we're still on track to fill the position within the time frame that we have originally envisaged. Then, of course, whenever a CEO leaves an organization, there's turmoil. And there were two of the people, one of them is right here, Solomon Gubani, who has been heading up the office of the CEO. Saul has gotten involved in the consulting game and the bug bitching, and he immediately left about a month later after Mabuto departed. And we had a very good chat, Saul and I. It's not the first time that I got to know Saul. I've met him about 3-4 years ago already, right at the beginning of the IOPS project. So I knew where Saul was headed, and we had a very good chat, and Saul is still involved in the game of helping government to improve service delivery. And of course, through his consultancy, he is now helping Mabuto at the moment. So, Jonas Bokoshi, now this is a double-edged sword for us. We have some very good people in CETA. And for Jonas used to be the Chief of Strategic Services. As one of the executive reporters from Mabuto, he already got a job offer a year ago from Kijima, and he delayed that until he found that was the right time to leave when Mabuto left. Although he also applied for the job, he was as CEO, he withdrew his candidacy. And they left for the private sector. Why I'm saying it's a double-edged sword, it indicates to us that there are very good people in CETA. Where if they leave CETA, even at executive level, they go and they get taken up by the private sector. He's now heading up a multi-billion organization as a CEO there. And subsequently, I've mentioned myself taking up the post. And operationally, CETA is doing extremely well. Our results, we're having an annual general meeting on Friday, where the minister will then, of course, be presented with our financial results for the financial year ending March 2007. And we have substantial improvements on the previous financial year. The results are very good. Of course, at this stage, until it has been published and brought to Parliament, we can't really talk about it, but I can just tell you that the results are very good. What I've been trying to do, and today I've been exactly 3 months in the post, but to make sure that I continue to stabilize the organization. I knew there was, we were going to be organizational turmoil and start churn in the process. And from that angle, I made sure that I stabilized things. I've spoken to most of my client representatives, National Treasury, EPSA, Department of Justice, all the DGs, and I allayed their fears in terms of service delivery. Even in the provinces, I've made regional visits to practically all the provinces. And those where I could not get to, consolidated some of the visits. And I've made sure that I also spoke to the DG at the Parliament. I've spoken to another, the Trade Committee on Defense, and of course the DOD and staff. And what has happened so far is we've had a very good response from our client base. They're very happy with the way things are going at CETA at the moment. We try our level best not to slip on service delivery, and where we can be improved. Internally in CETA, of course, we have to fill some of the posts that are vacant, especially at the executive level. But it would be folly of any acting CEO to go and fill posts where there's a permanent CEO in the waiting. And that permanent CEO must work with the people ultimately. So at this stage, the vacancies at the executive level, I am not going to fill them until the permanent CEO is appointed. However, we've advertised the post as a shortlisted candidate and just a case of getting involved in the interviews now. So it's not to say that we haven't done anything. And of course, the from Minister Fraser Molaketi's side, we engage a lot with her on strategic issues. We're helping her to prepare for PIAC as well as for GovTech, which is happening next week right here in Cape Town. And I think most of you have been invited to that as well. So that in short is CETA and the update in CETA. And I'm sure you'll probably have lots of questions later, but I'm happy to take them. I will hand over now to Saul to take you through the various MOUs that we have with our partners. Thank you very much.
Just before the actual presentation on the memorandum of understanding, just to assure you, acting CEO, that this committee does not ask questions. In fact, it does not fire questions. It asks questions, they fire some questions. And so be sure that no, it's fine. You are home. If they just sometimes think of firing questions, don't come on Wednesday. So maybe on Friday. So today you can relax.
Thank you, Chapa. For me, it's like homecoming. I've been to this portfolio committee a few times. Yeah. And as I think we all have said, I am at on a sort of permanent basis for now. But I think it was in January this year, during the strategic planning session of the portfolio committee, I mentioned that CETA has various memoranda of understanding with various entities, governments, and companies. And there was interest from the portfolio committee for us to come and present what those are. So I will very briefly just go over some of them. We have an MOU with the Pan-African Parliament, where we are assisting them to design their IT for the Pan-African Parliament. We have done a master system plan for them in MST, and the idea was that we were going to design an architecture and basically help procure the necessary items. So that MOU is still in place, and we're hoping that we're going to be able to work together on that. The NEPAD Commission, we also have an MOU, which was signed by Dr. Henry Sophia, who is the head of the commission, and the previous CEO of Maputo. Again, there we were talking about the e-school project, which has been rolled out, a launch of the project that was conducted by the president last year. So we are part of that commission. We have also the project of implementing a cable along the east coast of Africa as well as on the west coast. We were at a fundraising stage where I think the Japanese government offered about $6 million for the study and the, you know, the feasibility study. So we're also part of that project. We have not unfortunately been very active up to now, but in terms of consulting, we are working with the E-Commission. The Commonwealth, Network IT, Commonwealth IT, we have an MOU. This is an organization within the Commonwealth that looks at networks and IT methods. We, this cybercrime concern that I will talk about later, is part of the Commonwealth IT. We've done various, basically run conferences where we invite public servants from the government around, particularly in the SADC region. We've done one in Maputo late last year, and we had one during in February this year, which is also moving from on. So it's quite an interactive engagement where we share experiences and we do benchmarks, but most importantly, to offer training for public servants in various areas, particularly in the IT space. We had an MOU with Telkom, which was kind of significant in nature because the whole CISA idea has always been misunderstood in industry. Industry has always felt that CISA was a competitor. It's always argued that it was not the case. CISA's mandate is clearly spelled out in the act. We're not competing with anyone. So we had this MOU with Telkom, which unfortunately, I'll say, it turned out that it did not reach the goals it was intended to, that Telkom misinterpreted it to mean that they can then take over the mandated services of CISA. So that did not work out well, so we have to go back to the joint table with Telkom. And I can mention that currently we have offered, we went out on a tender for the infrastructure to upgrade our network infrastructure, which we awarded to Neotel, because of the various business imperatives that Telkom could fulfill, which Telkom couldn't. So the MOU with Telkom, I'd say, is really there in paper, but I think in principle, we still need to go back to the drawing board. We have been hosting quite a lot of delegations from African governments. We've hosted two delegations from Sudan. We hosted two delegations from Ghana, about three or four from Nigeria, Swaziland, Namibia, and Angola. Basically, the idea has been for them to benchmark CISA to see what are the services that CISA is providing to the government and how can they leverage on the expertise that CISA has put together for their own country. We have come to an MOU with a Nigeria company called Galaxy Backbone, which is it's like a CISA in Nigeria, but only looking at the network. They don't have a strategy of how to design transversal applications like we have here. So on that basis, we then entered into an MOU, which at this stage is unsigned. The idea was that it was going to be signed in the end of July. So with the elections in Nigeria and our change of guard in CISA, there were some delays on that, but in principle, we're going to have the MOU, which will enable them to benchmark our services and also for us to consult to them in terms of how it's designed in terms of allocation. So it is quite interesting. We find that a lot of the African states are looking up to South Africa for some of the IT and telecommunication services. So we are quite clear that we can be of assistance in this regard. And then we have various MOUs with private companies, industry partners. We have MOUs with India, companies from India, China. There is a company called Huawei Technologies, very good in telecom and networks. We have an MOU, which is really an R&D type MOU, because we obviously, when it comes to procurement, we've got to go, you know, the normal procurement route. But in basically designing solutions that are specific to government and benchmarking their services in the various countries, we found that this has come in very, very handy for us. We have been able to design solutions using the R&D opportunity with companies. For instance, at Home Affairs, we had a solution where you dial using your cell phone, you dial a number, and it probably gives you your date of birth, your marriage status. And we have other solutions that can actually give you your identity, now that you want to confirm it. You dial in, you put in your ID number, it will give you information about yourself. So we can check that your information in population register is correct. All of these we have been, we piloted using some of these MOUs with various industry players. So I must say that in positioning CSAT to be a center of excellence in government, this is going to become more and more crucial for us to be able to cast the net worldwide to find a unique solution for government and then to engage industry partners in designing those solutions. So that's as far as the presentation is about the MOU. We were not given quite a broad requirement. We're not sure if we needed to have copies of MOUs for the portfolio committee. These can be made available, I think, on the press. But that is really what we envisaged as a request for this presentation. The next one, again, it came out of the strategic session of the portfolio committee, was the cybercrime conference that was to be held at TNPECA. We had to see some of the members of the portfolio committee at the conference. It was opened by our minister. So it really got to the, it gave CETA and the South African government quite a high profile in the whole COMNET space. So I just want to let Dauma Shiko here take you through the various aspects of the presentation, if there are no questions, and then we can go through that presentation. Thanks.
Just to kick off with, just put some in perspective, as you well know, that the role and the function of CETA reports into the Department of Public Service Administration. And the importance of CETA's role in that aspect, it can be found in actually analyzing even the name of the actual department, in the sense that the two names being Public Service Administration. Public Service speaks to the front office of government, where you render the service to the citizens. And there's a lot of technology that gets deployed in that role. And CETA's role there becomes quite significant. And if you look at the part around administration, that looks into the back office of government, the administrative aspect. So IT is a very key component in achieving those. Now, with the advent of technology, in moving forward, you'll find that the more efficient it becomes, the more pervasive technology becomes, the riskier it becomes. if I can take you back to where you used to, you know, physically go to the pen with your pen book and write the book. You know, if somebody else got hold of those and physically write in the pen, it would have been extremely difficult for them to withdraw the money, because they are there, they can look at them, and they can just go to the party, this is not you. You know, you can ask questions on the spot, you know, what do you need? They want to that there. But now, you know, it has become easier. You can go and transact over the internet to the bank. It's become easier. But with that ease of transaction, a lot of risk comes into play. Because somebody can intercept, you know, that is something and do what you would have done with you. So that is why we really think that, you know, it is, and you know, cybercrime is something that really needs to be dealt with. Because there's a lot of opportunity for, you know, bad behavior out there. And we need to put things in place to ensure that it doesn't happen. Now, if I can just kick off with, to explain a bit around you know, what a network is. A network is really, it's a set of connected computers. You know, they can be connected via, you know, various mechanisms or protocols. They can be connected via, you know, fixed lines. They can be connected via, you know, a wireless mechanism. It could be, you know, WiMAX, Wi-Fi, it could be Bluetooth, it could be, you know, the via satellite, it could be via 3G, any mechanism. But a network is really, you know, around different devices. You should not necessarily be computers and being connected together. Now, in the just demonstrate, you know, the flow state. Now, what is an inter network? An inter network, that is really when you look at, you know, several networks that are interconnected as well. You could have a network in one organization talking to a network in another organization. I mean, if you look at, you know, where e-commerce started, you know, there was a mechanism called the EDI, Electronic Data Interchange, which has really allowed, you know, two intranets that are connected together. So I think before, you know, the advent of the internet. That, in essence, is how, you know, the inter-network has developed. Now, if you look at now, what is now referred to the fully-fledged, you know, internet now, that is where, you know, you're not necessarily talking about the two organizations now, you know, transacting electronically. You talk about a single entity transacting with the whole web. You know, if you get the cloud here, they become very simple. A cloud could be within, it could be a country, it could be a province, it could be, you know, another big part of the world. You could be sitting here in your home, working on your PC, and then via internet service provider connect with a whole suite of services. You know, using you know, a particular connection and a particular type of line. Now, all these technologies, they will take presentation. An interactive presentation that we're going to play that will put everything to perspective and explain all the various technologies. Now, this is the demo that I was referring to. It's going to take about 10 to 12 minutes.
Thank you. The packet is now launched onto your local and onto your interface. Ready to supply your web browser with the information you requested. That is, this is all. Pleased with their efforts and trusting the network, our trusty data packets roll off peacefully into the sunset of another day. Knowing fully they have served their masters well. Nice of that. A happy ending.
Just briefly explain, you know, some of the technical terminology that is normally associated with the, you know, the internet and the digital components. Now, some of the facts and figures about internet users. If you look at in terms of, you know, population and total for Africa, it's 900 million, okay? Which is 14% of the total world population, is about 6.5 billion. Okay. Now, internet users, looking at 23 million, as a percentage of this 900 million, basically you're looking at like only 2.6% of the people in Africa are using the internet. If you compare that with the rest of the world, you find that 17% of the people in the world are using the internet. Now, if you look at the percentage of the users, the number of people in Africa who are using the internet, so the percentage of the total of the people who are using the internet is very low. Only 2.3 compared to 97% of the rest of the world. Okay. But in terms of growth, we, over the past 5 years, we've achieved a growth of 423% as opposed to 180% for the rest of the world. And the reason there is that we are moving from a very low base. You know, if we are moving from 5 people to 500 people, that's a significant growth in numbers. But if you are moving from 1 million people to 1,050,000, you know, percentage-wise, although it's more people, but percentage-wise, it's lower. So there is a tremendous potential for growth of the internet users here within the African continent.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
They're going to be the slide that shows the South Africa. I see the use of internet in Africa as a whole. Do we have a breakdown that also shows in terms of how we think? I'm going to say that.
If I can say that. No, we don't have the slide here, but South Africa has the lion's share of the usage. I think it's something like 57%.
Now, if you look at online sales, which is, you know, the normal transaction over the internet, like, you know, the retailing transaction, for instance, buying a TV over the internet, you'll find that the biggest share is also in the North American region, who are like almost you know, almost half of the transactions online are happening in the North American region, and then they are closely followed by the Asia Pacific, and then now followed by Western Europe. Now the rest is really, it's Africa, Middle East, Eastern Europe, and Latin America. Africa and Middle East is just 5.2, I know the color is not this one, but it's 5.2 million US dollars. Okay. Now, if you expand it to look at not just the simple transaction over the internet, if you combine e-commerce with e-business and e-government, you know, whatever number of transactions or whatever type of change that can happen over the internet, you will then find that, you know, if you compare from 2002 to 2006, the biggest part of the transactions were happening within the North American region. now moving to 2006, there's been a significant uptake in the other regions as well, where the total percentage has sort of decreased, but the volume has increased. So basically, the message here is that, you know, the east of the internet is very fair to say that it is growing. Now, looking at Africa and the rest of the world again, even though it's like a small portion here, but you can see the rent moving from $23 billion to $264 billion. That is like a significant growth as well. So it's something that is worth noting. It's something that that you need to really measure and grow. Now, I started earlier on by talking about cybercrime. Now, some of the definitions that I mentioned. Cybercrime is really, simply put, it's a crime committed in cyberspace. Okay? Through computers or through whatever devices, be a cell phone as well, via the internet. Okay? And it can take the form of viruses or worms, which can implant some sort of an executable. And or to to instill a denial of service, or to do some sort of malicious damage by which you can find in whatever targeted medium. And then some of the types we can talk about, saying which is really unsolicited unsolicited communication that can be dropped on me. Yes, some people use it for this vicious marketing strategy, where you get a whole lot of emails that are being through social media. That is very simple, unsolicited. And then you can have the trojans, which sometimes they can trigger replication of email messages in your address book and just send indiscreetly to a whole lot of to your computer. You can get spyware, which is which is software that can within your computer determine what is running on there and try and sell that information to be used elsewhere. It can be used for industrial espionage as well. And then you get phishing. Phishing is one of the common examples is where you try to do from your internet banking and you go via some sort of link to a website and you simply believe that website say you work with something. You simply believe that is the something website. And it prompts you to key in your profile number and your PIN number and all those things. Only to find that is actually just a screen that might look like the sort of thing screen, but it's something else. That's the point around phishing. So they solicit that information from you to you on the real website. So that's some of the types of cybercrime where it happens. Hackers, that is where we started with a very technical study people who work alone and hacking the computer, basically breaking down the security of the computer and doing whatever that they need to do. It could be somebody that is probably been has issues with the organization and now they're sitting in a corner somewhere and get back in the organization, they log back into the corporate machine and do all of the damage on it. Could be by deleting some key information or actually putting in that information to sell elsewhere. So hacking is really around going into the general computer without the proper authorization.
I think just to add, on the phishing side, to avoid being a victim, I think banks are now sending messages to their clients to say do not log on to the bank's website via an internet cafe. Because there are smart people who can come in after you've left, put in some software that will replay all the keystrokes that you had, and then be able to use your information to defraud your bank account. So it's important to mention that to avoid being a victim of that, do not log on to sensitive websites from a public place like an internet cafe.
Now, the digital approach to fight cybercrime, there's really been people who were heading their own, solitary initiatives. But now the move is more towards a more organized, coordinated effort among groups of people, which is also quite up to say that, what we want to talk about earlier on, around the agreements that supported the various regions, what the private sector is doing in collaboration with this thing, government around the world are beginning to think like what? Also, cyber piracy is where, you know, people want to make money. You know, they can, whatever the financial motivation, organized can just be issued in the future. And now, last but not least, which is also obviously all the forms of things like pornography and unregulated gambling. That is in a nutshell, you know, some of the examples of the of cyber crime. Not catching that, it says what area on alluded to in terms of let's fight it together. It needs to be like a collaborative effort to ensure that, you know, some kind is in the control and communicated to everyone. There's significant losses in money, you know, that can be caused by that cyber crime. You had the babies that have got on the screen, they will show you the money case in 2005. The viruses alone, I mean, the total losses, looking at $42 million US dollars. Unauthorized access, $31 million. You know, theft of proprietary info, where it says, you know, can be hacking your computer and copy some of the sensitive information and cause damage of whatever kind doing that. $30 million. In total, in 2005, the total losses that they calculated was $130 million US dollars. So it is indeed quite a sensitive issue. These are some of the other examples of denial of service, internet abuse. Laptop theft, is also a form of cyber crime as well. Because, I mean, these days you get like a serious hard drive on the machine, you can basically store, you know, a data that's related to the entire organization. And if that computer is stolen, you can obviously imagine, you know, the ramifications that can happen over there. But let us cross. Meet Jesus, come back, what are we thinking? What should we talk about the orange? And we saw like, for instance, fishing and then. City meditation, you know, ask Jesus for a wireless network. A lot of people are still quite persisting around in wireless. They're saying it's not safe. They should teach us. That has come out now to ensure that the Christians are transactions and quite safe around the wireless network. Sabotage, you know, which is like a demonic intent. Telephone fraud and website statement. There's a whole set of these things. I'm sure the list is not exhaustive. But there's a whole lot of damage that can be done by the internet. I said earlier on that when you're physically there, it's easier to recruit and keep, but if you're logging on, and you're talking to a child, it's over the internet and you're on another device, and you can pretend to another child, and you can lure the poor child to watch something that... So now this is another demonstration to show you. It can get quite serious.
Yeah.
Now, some of the legal issues and international cooperation that fight against such type of crisis. This is just one scenario, which is based on a real scenario, where criminals intruded into a bank in Manila. Okay. Now, this is not to say that the person was in Manila. There was an intrusion that happened within a bank in Manila. Okay. Now, via investigators in the Philippines, discovered the attack came from a computer in Argentina. Okay. Now the Argentinian investigators discovered that actually the attack came from Seoul. And the Korean agents discovered that actually the attack came from Vancouver. And then the arrest was made in Canada and the cybercrime happened in Manila. And some of the legal aspects, I'll make another example on this type of thing. About five, 6 years ago, I received a call from a very fancy lady, being my wife, that something has happened in the account, I don't know what it is. So we contacted the bank and then it was discovered that she was actually internet fraud. And she received the matter said that we needed to report the case to the police station. When we go to the police station, the question that was asked, one of the key questions that are asked in any case that has been reported, where did this thing happen? Because you need to go and report it in the police station in the area where the crime happened. And he said, we don't know. And the guy said, no, but hang on, I can't take the payment. You need to tell me where this thing happened. I mean, it happened in several states, we don't know. And it took about 3 days to eventually have the payment taken. They needed to understand that we deal with a different type of crime. It's not something that you can say it happened in law, or it happened in money or it happened wherever. It's a type of case, it's a very, it's an open case. Anything can happen anywhere. Now, in terms of international cooperation, some of the aspects that we need to think care of in dealing with the cyber crisis. You know, countries need to enact sufficient laws, you know, to criminalize computer abuse, because without the laws, it becomes difficult. And also, because the internet is still relatively new, so the legal fraternity is in the process of actually catching up. It's difficult in the, I mean, you can work in the States while you're based in South Africa. You can just connect to a computer that's working, you know, in the United States. Now, when you pay a tax, when you get out of America, you know, things like those. I'm sure that question can be answered now, but maybe there are issues around those. And there's a whole lot of other things around, you know, the law as to how do you, you know, how do you govern, you know, as the use of computers. Now these are, the law we're referring to here is the law that actually criminalizes the computer. The state needs to define they want that abuse of that computer and then criminalize it using sufficient law. The second one is to really commit, you know, adequate personnel resources. And by adequate here, we talk about numbers and skills. You know, it doesn't matter if you have, 500 or 500,000 resources deployed when they are not actually, you know, prolific on the political aspect. So here it's very important to make sure that you've got the right skills and the right number of people to deal with this type of thing. And then also you need to, you know, to improve the ability to locate and identify the criminal. Because one of the most difficult things about cyber crime is actually doing the location. You can see where the crime has happened, but now to locate where it happened and to identify the criminal is a very difficult subject. So you need to really put resources to improve so that we need to be able to locate and identify the criminal. And then also now, that is most very, very important is to improve the ability to collect and share this evidence internationally. These are people that need to be profiled, you know, because they are known out there. That information needs to be shared. If there's new ways of tracking into computers, or there's new viruses or stolen, those need to be communicated and shared so that everybody knows that this relationship. Because technology evolves a lot, and that also is the way to conduct cybercrime. So if it's collaborative, even if it happens in the States and we get to know about it before it happens, by the time it happens, we know about it, it's a problem.
If I can just add to that, chat. For instance, in the United States, there are a myriad of legislation which deals with this, where in some other places, like for instance here at home, we are very conscious of individual rights and so on. So there are things that we can't do legally, such as if you talk about sharing information. The information, the cyber crime, means that you've got to have access to various databases. It could be anywhere. Now, if in a particular country something is not a crime, whereas in another country it is a crime, there could be a problem to say how do you access that evidence. In America, as I was saying, you have a law which enables you, once something has been declared as a crime, a cyber crime, the organization is allowed legally to intrude into people's personal domain to put together evidence for this. So it is a very, very complex environment, not just technologically. In fact, I would say technologically it's easy. It can be done. The challenge comes to, you know, becomes the legality of the matter, how two countries collaborate with each other, what sort of agreements and treaties exist between countries, and so on. And once evidence has been put together, what are the legal ramifications for getting witnesses to a particular place? So it is a complex environment that countries are really getting into.
And adding to what Flora said as well, it's around what constitutes a personal record. Now, do the other countries have a right to take, does South Africa have a right to take my profile, you know, my personal records and share them with the other countries?
you know, even if it's for the good, but is it fair? Is it the same? Sometimes what is good is not fair. Sometimes what is fair is not good.
Yeah.
How do you balance the two? You know? So things like those, all those kind of issues of the you know, legal nature. And with that, I will welcome question which says that will be shared among the. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think the presentation some of us go even more than we were expected in terms of what comes out here, you know, in the world of technology. And saying so because everything is going you know, in government, in banking, maybe there will also be e-legislation.
Yeah.
And e-policy, you know. You know, everything is going e, but I think this presentation goes a long way to actually outlining the basics around what goes on in that one. Colleagues, are there questions that want to ask and comment?
There's a question that I would like them to comment just on the last input when you say it's about organic in some countries you can do that in some countries it's a democratic right. Recently that there has been news in the coming times that some newspapers controlling the record of the minister which is supposedly confidential when you go into hospital as a patient, now it goes in public. Now my question is the newspaper entitled to get my confidential hospital record and go out and publicize it?
Thank you very much. Thank you very
much. Just a comment, a comment that I've requested from Peter.
Yeah.
Given the extent of the cybercrime that you just explained, to what extent can you brief us as to what extent you have updated your own systems to protect the information?
Thank you, Chairperson. Ladies and gentlemen, Brother Lee and Jerry and Howard about the understanding technology sets a malaria question. Some few questions and maybe a comment. The first one might be it's in relation to the memorandum of understanding. Besides sharing experiences, what else can you maybe tell us to say out of those understanding you are gaining as an organization? The second one, it's good to position CETA to be, you know, a center of excellence. And it's very good to have a person who was part of the organization before to come here. But if the chairman can take us a bit about elaboration as CEO and the fact that there were some things on paper, we can't take those and talk about them. But I think it will be relevant for us not to just say the stuff we need, everything is all. If you happen to have Mr. Mbubane, let's say what join the big companies abroad. Were you going to be in a position to come here as CETA and be able to reflect for us to understand that all is in order? Because it's not all part of the organization, but you can check the manner in which she was, you know, sharing the information with us.
you are so excellent. The key is that you are attending the institution. But I'm asking myself a question, Chairperson, if you are not part of the organization, were you going to be in a position to give us that detailed information so that we can truly say it's at its position as a center of excellence? The last one, Chairperson, CEO is out, then some few weeks, two are out. Second CEO, you were aware before the CEO leaving that there were others that were going to leave, or is it related to the one that has leaving? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks,
Mr.
Yambi. Maybe let's have this as a first power
session. Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the questions, Honorable Member. I think I'm really not qualified to talk on the medical records of the minister. However, I can talk from a legal perspective because I have a legal background, although I'm an accountant by profession. There is obviously channels through which information can be obtained, and newspapers have to sell newspapers and make money. So they find their own sources how to get information. But it's, in my opinion, definitely illegal to go and obtain the medical records of anybody because these things are confidential. And that confidentiality must be protected at all times. The aspect of having updated CETA systems to protect our information, the CETA has a very good cooperation with our other organs of state, such as ComSec, National Intelligence, and so forth. And we employ the latest technologies in order to make sure that our systems are protected. A case in point, about 2 years ago, there was a terrible worm that was doing the round. What is it called? Subtle worm. It did not penetrate the government Common Core network. I could continue to work in science and technology with no interruption of service because I was one of the people who phoned CETA to find out if everything under control, and I had no problem with that. Likewise, internally in CETA, we obviously have to stay abreast of development, so we send our people on conferences, courses, we employ new people. We look for the right competences in people. It took us over a year just to get our chief information officer in place because we were determined we're going to find the right person with the right competences and the right skills. And that person is on board currently, started the 1st of August. So we have to be extremely careful that we get the right people to come and help around CETA. And in terms of systems, you know, your systems, I'm not saying our systems are foolproof. Hackers will continue to find new and innovative ways in order to penetrate systems. But as far as CETA is concerned, we obviously try to stay abreast of latest technologies and development and some of our international agreements and relationships that we treasure. But also we invest in research and development. We piggyback on some of the international agreement with the country of China. For example, the ISA relationship, we exploit it to the full extent possible. And we're getting very good technologies into the country to help us. And it's also homegrown technologies. Some of them, obviously we can't talk about it, issues such as security and systems very openly, but I can tell you that CETA is doing everything in its power to make sure that your information is protected. The aspect of the, I think Todd can continue to talk later about MAVs again, but the question of centers of excellence and what happens if Todd leaves. I spoke about that earlier, but just in particular to address the reason why Todd is here today. If I had known a week ago, and I will now talk very openly, if I had known a week ago, that the FAA gives this presentation today, I would not have had the need for Saul to be here, because we'd have had the chance to download the information and make sure that we presented ourselves. We've seen a two-third presentation at the moment from Intel and CETA. However, I heard about this presentation yesterday, 12 o'clock. I found the chair personally. And I spoke to the chair, and he pleaded with me to please make sure that you guys are here today. And I gave him the understanding that I will be here, and I'll use all means at my disposal in order to make sure that we give you the presentation today. We saw on the shelf, while we were still working at the CETA, we actually came down to give a presentation that night, on the 2nd of June, and to give the presentation the next morning. So he was still involved in CETA as an employee. 9 o'clock that evening, we got a phone call to say that the next morning, we are not needed yet, because the presentation was cancelled. So what happened? We arrived at the hotel, the evening slept, the next morning we packed our bags and went back. So that was a fruitless expenditure. I haven't charged Parliament for that. Okay? And I will not. But that just demonstrated, even though that same evening we still had Magusa's farewell, we got into a place that we were here early the next morning in order to give the presentation. So what I'm trying to say is that I rely on my people, and the communication for today's presentation did not work very well. And they are blame CETA. So, because some of my staff members knew about a week ago, while Paul was in Japan, that this presentation was happening today. Unfortunately, up until yesterday, we could not get hold of Paul. But he kindly agreed when I spoke to him to come with us in order to give the presentation. In other words, it shows that there's still very good cooperation between ex-employees and CETA. But we would have been able, if we had sufficient time, to do this presentation. And notwithstanding the institutional memory that some of our members have, because some people, in this case, Saul attended the cybercrime conference. That was before our time. And of course, he used it and the cooperation that we have and the institutional memory. Now, it's important that CETA not learn from this experience as well, to make sure that when people leave the organization, that there's a proper handover. And Tao is actually here because he has taken over some of the responsibilities of Saul. And I mentioned earlier, and this is how obviously skills and knowledge transfer must work in any organization. And that was the plan that I put in place when Saul decided to leave. Now, and I indicated earlier, it's very, very difficult for anybody in an acting capacity to go and make permanent appointments, because you are not going to love and work with those people afterwards. So please take note that I still have that limitation as an acting CEO, not to go and drop the boat too much, but to make sure everything continues. It's obviously not business as usual, because otherwise we... where there's areas that we can improve on, we have to improve. So, and I'm pushing for all of those issues. But we are trying to make sure that things continue to work. And I don't think in the past 3 months we've had any negative issues in the press, save for those who have been clamoring for clarity on the content of the CDO. And I've indicated how the process is currently unfolding. A good question about, in terms of organizational dynamics, one can expect things to happen and the staff said, as I indicated. But as you can't help for those things, but you have to make sure the contingency measures are in place. I think I honor the promise that I made to the chair yesterday, and so honor the promise that he made to the broader community, all of you. And I just want to commend him for being available at such short notice to come down and assist us in this presentation. Well, I think the next question, Emily.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just a comment on the point that was made earlier about the access to information. We we have had the CCTX for the past 2 years now. And I'm a bit embarrassed to say that we were quite behind in terms of some of our other partners. Botswana is way ahead of us. Mauritius is also way ahead in terms of their fiber legislation. But we are there, we've caught up, I'm glad to say. Some of the things, the issues, are the admissibility of electronic information in court. If someone can say, this is not an authentic document, it has been manipulated, it's very, very difficult to prove otherwise. So that's why it becomes technically difficult to say this is true, it did happen. A very good example closer to home is, again, being at Home Affairs, I'm a bit closer to this matter. We have a huge database of fingerprints for the population under the Harness project. The police have built up also a very big database of fingerprints. Now the question is, isn't that duplication? And the answer is, it is duplication, but legally, if you allow the police access to the population database of fingerprints, you're basically criminalizing the whole population. So everyone is a criminal until proven innocent. That is the philosophy behind it. Although, I believe technologically, we can overcome that quite easily. We have things such as authentication and non-repudiation, which says if a document is authentic, in other words, if my fingerprint is authentic, no one can manipulate it electronically to make it otherwise. So I'm saying that is possible, but I think it's going to be a while before our legal people understand or assimilate the fact that technology can be made authentic and without repudiation. So those are the kinds of things that are impeding. In some countries, as I said, we have the ECTS, which really enables a lot of these things, but some countries don't. So if information is sitting in a server in, say, Dubai, because you never know where these things go, access to that server might be restricted legally by the powers that be. Whereas that could be crucial information to prosecute someone in Canada or in the US. So it is a complex set of issues. But the United Nations and various other institutions have put together a whole lot of legislation that governs how countries should interact electronically and, you know, how evidence can be. So it is a complex matter, and I don't think that technology is going to solve the problem. It's going to be legal. People will have to come up with a solution. The other one I just want to comment on quickly was what has this done, and I think the acting CEO has answered this. We did implement an intrusion detection system 2 years ago in the wide area network, because the problem we had before was some of the departments that link into the network do not have the necessary firewalls and antivirus software. Now, CISA obviously is looking after the core of the network, not the edge. For some departments, we look after everything, which is not a problem. That's why the police were not affected by that virus, and some of the departments that we actually supported, their local area networks did not have a problem. But the other ones who have their own arrangements with private sector companies were the ones who were actually affected, and they in turn, you know, infected the core of the network. So when you put the intrusion detection system, what it does is, if it detects that a port from some department is infecting the network with viruses, it just shuts down the port so that we can then inform the individual that you have a virus in your network, so we shut down your port. But that system is a fairly sophisticated system. It can give us exactly the statistics of what happened. So we have systems in place. But one point you did not mention in the presentation that I think maybe I should bring up is that while Africa is a very minor user of the internet, in the top 10 of countries that have cybercrime, Nigeria is number 4. We are number 10. So we feature in the top 10, you know, in 2 positions. It is a bit embarrassing, but that is the state of affairs. So it's important that we really, as a country, take this cybercrime issue seriously, because a lot of fraud, people are finding loopholes every day of how to circumvent the system. MOUs, I have to say that in most cases, it's not a give and take, it's a give. We, as South Africa, are giving. I don't recall a situation where, except for India and Brazil, where we have some agreement on how to share in the open source environment. Within Africa, it's really, we are offering the service to for them to benchmark our systems and to assist them in developing their own systems. So it's really that kind of a scenario. With the R&D MOUs, with the private companies, yes, that is a give and take. We put together a team to develop a solution, which, if it works, then CETA will benefit in terms of implementing the solution for government. So we are quite mindful of the fact that there are also bilateral arrangements between the government or through the Department of Public Service Administration, where we also have to step up to the challenge in terms of offering our services, such as the elections in the DRC. We have to send people there to actually look up the servers for the elections. So it is that arrangement where, particularly in Africa, we are giving quite a lot. With the other international parties, partners, we also have something to gain.
Chair, if I can just comment on the last part again, the gaining, but I think it's important to note that although there may not be direct benefits, because when we go and assist our clients, like the DoD, in troubled areas, and we have to look after the communications and IT systems, we do it as CETA to service our clients, because we're helping the continent of Africa ultimately. So there's collateral benefits to South Africa, and the indirect benefits that the country as a whole then can enjoy as being seen as a friendly country to the rest of the continent. Because if one talks to our trade partners, one often finds that they see us in a very negative light. No names, no lawsuits. But being through the activities of CETA, some of the indirect benefits is definitely the fact that we gain acceptance, we gain credibility as a country for our work that you just saw. Thank you.
Okay. My friend, thanks for the first set of questions. Maybe before commenting on the responses and whether some questions are unique for us, we may just have to accept the portfolio committee and think that I think something might have gone wrong in our communication when we refer to the communication about this meeting and the postponement that was done sometime. I think just as a comment is that as a responsibility to do oversight, we would like to have also do oversight on our own efforts. If something went wrong somewhere, I think we would empower all each other. We would investigate. And we empower them to empower their chronological blood. It was not supposed to be a matter of 2 weeks that he should be away, because we developed an annual program in the portfolio committee after the strategic planning session, and we communicated that to all the stakeholders, supposedly successfully. So taking from there, if there are a changes or the program, such was supposed to be done in a manner that we don't cause inconvenience to other parties. But like I said, we commit ourselves that we come back to you to just to establish what exactly might have happened. I think it was good that the president who asked that question, that led to this type of report. Because we would have easily, you know, gone through a serious matter, you know, referring to it as a mere technicality that we are sitting here, we started this meeting one without them, two without clarity as to what is the committee's expectation. Because it's always good that when you come and brief us, just to indicate the item is not enough. But we need to go to the extent of indicating what is our expectation. Because coming here and knowing what our expectations are, you would have of course known that it will be necessary for this committee to know what is contained in those memoranda of understanding. In terms of the challenges that are there in our electronic world, whether those memoranda of understanding in terms of the context address themselves to address the main issues. Of course, even in areas where you have our memoranda of understanding as one way through, that is what you can actually find out. You can actually see from a memorandum of understanding. A memorandum of understanding. That's it. Maybe some of them, you see, when we draw this memorandum of understanding, some of them, we actually maybe introduce ourselves as a giver. Any memorandum of understanding has its origin. That is the initiator. It was initiated someone. So you could see from a memorandum of understanding that no, this is initiated from here, and that the initiation itself will even define the further interaction. Whether you become a giver or you are a giver and a seeker at the same time, some of those things. So I think we will definitely have to address to this topic at the stage where we are fully well prepared, all of us. So that we don't lose that. I think it was good that you started here, you came in here, you giving us information about the network and the internet, all the things that you don't know about. It then assists us to know technically as what is going on there. But maybe as you have indicated, on the question of training, that you know, we as a portfolio committee, we do get into training sessions, you know, so study course. You go and check out what is happening there, so that even when you raise an issue, you don't have a member of parliament just join the medic crowd. Those will just go out and raise concerns, say there's no delivery here, there's no delivery there, without actually maybe having the understanding of the final details in terms of what is going on in those things. I think we might want to consider that. It will also help us that when we come back and then say, let's look at those memorandum of understanding. To what extent are we actually addressing issues in a manner that will show the expected vision in a situation where we will have. But if you didn't with take information, apart from dealing with state information, it is the government that has to lead the way so that the citizens are actually protected. As technology advances, the citizens of this country don't have to be left vulnerable. And what is that entity that has the responsibility to protect the citizens? It is the state. So if we then have a situation like we have a good structure like yourself, then we are in a position to to can say, yes, we believe that we are ready for this change, or we know that we are not ready, and therefore we are setting the government priority. I think those are also more, not questions, but I mean more comments, and also suggestions in terms of how we may need to take the information forward. You responded to the question by Mr. Gavazo, when he said, what has CISA done to protect state information? If you responded. But what maybe would also be interesting is to check the effectiveness of that, of that intervention that you would try to address the information. I'm sure that the things like if we can take the minor things, the major things that Mr. Sakana special, but it will even be worse if you find that the outsiders may actually get to know even informative. I mean, if you sometimes talk of classified informative. So to what extent can we then say, we are rest assured that we are effective in terms of that. We did attend, I think we represented at the cyber conference. We are still going to reflect when we discuss and consider the response before that conference. Of course, main challenges and international experience obviously has been shared that we are still going to address those. I saw during the, whatever they showed, the first demo, not the first demo, no, the first demo. I'm not sure whether what I saw there explained that in the world of network, you also have big brother. I'm not sure. Take what I thought. I'm saying this because there was something there that was knocking anything that is coming. If it doesn't want it, knock it. What does that suggest? Does it suggest that we have big brothers? And if we have big brothers, what extent are we sisters? They can deliver with some of those things. Now, those are just maybe some minor issues. But coming back home, of course, there's a question that Mr. Nyambi asked, which has not been fully answered. I don't want to use the word exodus, but it is actually exodus is exaggeration, but close to that. I'm sure that you have not fully answered that question. Of course, I for one would not expect a full answer from myself other than to explain the way you did. Greener pastures, more challenges, greater involvement. Those are the things that we say every time. I think it's our responsibility as a portfolio committee. We have been saying time and again. We have been saying more especially. It was not so very serious with CISA, I think it was, but CISA something like. When in our public service, we do have what we call exit interviews every time. And whether if you do that, you actually get serious about it. Because when you do an interview, it depends on the interviewer to get to the bottom. Even if it's under pressure that I have to leave, obviously, under pressure because maybe I'm frustrated that the systems are not supporting, that the project that I have to do does not have the necessary support. So I think it's better to pack my bag and go somewhere. It's not always that easy. If, for instance, a different person will interview, it's not always easy to say, to give the reasons. You will always come around and say, see that I carry you for 1, 2, 3 and stuff like that. So I'm saying, don't feel that you underperform by not having answered perfect, fully that question. We know there is no answer. But we make it our responsibility maybe to dig and get the answer as far as possible. The challenge that we indicated that they in an acting for the game and they challenge us to be able to do that, I think is, but what we should know, of course, is that a three-sided organization, and it is that the country is not interested. And development in the area where people have to play an active role, it's still ongoing. And of course, we need to do that. It's just the most. Thanks very much. I'm not sure if there are other colleagues who can no over.
This one is, I did not.
Yeah.
This one is not personal.
Okay.
I'm being stimulated by your comments. I wasn't here when you started. The problem is that from Laboria Park Chairperson, the municipal police are on strike blocking somewhere in your land and so forth. So to turn back and go and start the N1 all the way. Anyway, that's your democracy. But what is worrying me, why I'm making this comment, taking from you, is you're talking as if he has left the organization here.
Yes.
For what? For who? You mentioned that. I'm asking you, sir. Did you mention
for the state is in order?
Oh, then I'm
sorry. And I'm concerned what is you're in home affairs. our main man is on matters of state.
No,
everybody going home affairs. Now we just going to home affairs all of us.
So I'm mentioning this because, as I said, we've been reaching both the public service and home affairs. And I've long picked up that he's an expert, you know, in technology and so forth. So I was saying, how could this the department who's a man of that caliber, you know? So if they are still keeping him, then it's all right, because Peter can always call him back to help here and there. He's one of in the country that I think is well rooted in technology. That's why Home Affairs is calling him. Oh, my boss has gone there, so he wants to go.
Number one is paid. Okay, not saying about the comments. I think maybe it's taking from what you said. There is a lot of things that the media will support, of course, they used to tell the things. But you know, when we do have information, the members of parliament, we are actually able to make an intervention. Like, I mean, the issue of countering the state. The state has of having so many branches.
So, Chen, what you're saying is the media is a liar.
Your own interpretation.
Any comments? There are some other questions, I think. That will be the last comment you may even smuggle your thoughts in the mouth.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. You know, the difficulty with a presentation like this is to try and find a comprehensive angle in order to satisfy everybody. So, but we tried our best, and I'm sure, and certainly some of the questions I deliberately left unanswered. And I have made a note that you certainly need to call some members. And I welcome the opportunity that we can engage in order to make sure that you are empowered with information as far as CISO is concerned. So certainly the offer is there, and I certainly will do that. While we're talking, I actually got a call from the chairman as well. But be that as it may, for me, the issue of steel retention in the country and in CETA is a very important one. The strategy is in place, and we tried our level best to retain some people. Believe me, the green forces out there are very green. And we will continue to have the challenge, but we also recognize that in the broader scheme of things, the strengthening of the state is something that has to happen. And I'm happy to see the cross-pollination of the skill competencies that is currently going on. And my concern is when people leave the state system, very good people like Saul, and Saul knows the discussions that we had before I left, and we will continue to ensure that we try and retain people where we can. We will see that not a closed shop for people. If the greener pastures turn out to be not so green, people can come back, and we have instances where people have come back to see that as well. But we recognize that we need to move rapidly on certain issues, and those things are getting attention. The board has set through a very, very comprehensive human resource strategy about 2 weeks ago. And we're very impressed with what was presented to us there, and we'll take all of those issues on board. But your questions have been very penetrating, very candid, and it's good food for thought. And certainly from our side, we'll take it back to the ranch, and I'll make sure that some of the good stuff, as you have mentioned here, get implemented. And also giving feedback to you. And very important that we can engage with each other. And I just want to thank my team, Saul, once again, for coming at such short notice, and Carl as well as Tanya. We also need to make sure that everything went very smoothly today. And I'm looking forward to continued engagement with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the presentation was which was so informative and so helpful, meeting our expectations. Of course, as you said, noting that the time has been of effect, we could have maybe even got more than we expected. But we thank you very much for your presentation. It was just that some of the things I have said, we still have to come back to them, because really we didn't like to see ourselves pushing one another or pulling one another to presentations like this. But it's a public meeting. And we didn't like to appear like an uncoordinated part of the world that may be problematic. I think those technicalities having been noted, we'll try by all means to make sure that they don't understand. So once more, thank you very much and colleagues for this part of our meeting. You have been as lively as I know you. And we then we are done with this item. Just to remain in the community to look at some of our internal business.
Yes, sir.
Thank
you.
I'm told bank is there. We don't want to pay the fine for having inconvenienced you by you staying away from that line. It's at much building there's anyone around it. We'll join, there are some of the things that
have been circulated to members. Now report by members of the committee who attended to a conference. So they are seeing at an individual level a person or a group of members of the letter sharing with us as to what transpired at your conference. We just want to get your comments there, so that with your comments we can then be able to consolidate that and have it in a committee report form, just for adoption at our next meeting. So for the purpose of today, if then they, let's actually get your comments there. Those members who attended may actually, if there are some highlights, may actually take a through and then they consider this issue, consider that issue, so that from there we are assisted in terms of dealing with everything. The first report on the Global Forum Price Conference. We were represented at the Global Forum Price Conference by Dr. Rosna Rain, the secretary, who has not familiar with it. The Global Forum Price, that was the one that was having to take on the So Dr. Rosna Rain attended and we have a copy of the report. It's not yet talking the report itself. But may I check if colleagues there is anything serious that you pick up. In fact, our participating in the talking to us the team. So people apply their technology when they leave. Okay, we'll send you the ecology complex. Okay, fine, I'll use my alibi.
Okay. Look, I told you that you go to the lawyer. Let me know. Maybe the time to go to the
It's very important. In time and went through it. If there is an indication like what you need to say, obviously then we may then have to agree that on this one. If also on the other one, let's reflect on this one. If on this one it is only now that we receive the report. And Dr. Rosna Rain, who's the author, is not ready to talk to the report. We can agree that members let's go and read it. And then we, at our next meeting, we will have already extracted some issues from the chairperson's office, try to put them in the folder of a committee report. But subject it for amendment when you come in and make those improvements. Can we agree on that one? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as we deal with that report, what we need to look at is that when you attend a conference, and you submit a report, you may put it in any side, but what we would like to see is observation. What we would like to see, second, we would like to see what happened there, that is preparation, the main issue, then observation, that is where you start to analyze the situation, relating it to our own situation. And if there are recommendations, you put up a recommendation. These recommendations may be what we think this committee should do about those things that we observe there. Or these recommendations may be things that one parliament should do about those recommendations. So that when we submit a report to parliament, we are able to indicate whether one parliament to adopt the report or whether one parliament to debate the report or whether one parliament to note the report. Because when you submit a report, it either is for noting by parliament or for action by parliament when you come with recommendations. That is to approve some of the things you recommend. That can be done without debating, or if you want that will also debate the report, then I think it would be necessary. Like the cybercrime one, conference one, I think obviously those who represent us there, when we deal with the report, we definitely have to debate that in the House. It's a very interesting subject. So I was then suggesting that when we look at this report, let's focus on those things and submit our own input. The second report is the report on the Global Organization of Parliamentarians Against Corruption. And Mr. Kakan is here. The report has been circulated. I think you received it like the first report.
Yeah,
all together today.
Yeah.
So the same applies to if we can then say, let's actually address it like that. But Mr. Kakan is here. If there are things that you'd like to share with us, that which we need to take into consideration when we further consider the report, we will give him an opportunity to address it. Over to you.
Thank you.
to be considered as a terrorist organization. You talk of the Islamic, because this is a media organization. And a personal life discovered for the first time that there are world Islamic organizations which are completely and totally against what is happening around the world, no matter how negative it has created in front of us. So they started with the legal, they started telling us, for instance, that you take an organization like Al-Qaeda, which has been mentioned all over the world as a terrorist organization. They say we should have an understanding what Al-Qaeda stands for. Why, for instance, in Israel, fighting apart, that they are both fighting for the liberation of Palestinian people. They say Al-Qaeda is an organization that kills even the Arab people. It has no choice. I mean, it doesn't choose. It pick and choose. We can't bomb you and so forth, because they have their own philosophy which says to the young people, it is honorable to go and die there, because yours is the better life in the future. So go and commit a suicide bomb, and because you're getting to a better life. So they go around the world bombarding people with this psycho idea of suicide bombing. So this was a new thing to us, that we must not club Islamic as a religion with all these things which have been done by the so-called terrorists in the organization. There was one example of they say in Italy, one Islamic leader was killed, and there was a violent act that erupted in Italy, which almost threatened the country. But they say after that, they said, let's investigate what really caused this, what really happened. One thing they say was surprising is that on investigation they discovered that the Arabs or the Islamic world in Italy was seated there holding their arms, only 3% reacted to that. Now, they say this led to them in learning that it's not always good just to out of hand and say the Arabs are doing it and that and so forth. So that is one caution. I have condensed this chapter in my report. But one thing I want to highlight in my report, from what you have just said, I condensed everything in paragraphs, so that, because I thought it will now stimulate debate, perhaps make me elaborate as to what was being discussed here, what were the comments, what was the decision, because otherwise I would have written a big thing to go by as to how the debate went about. But I conducted in such a way that it stimulates debate from you. Secondly, I didn't in my report put a recommendation for the very reason that once we have discussed this, it is up to the committee to say, in view of this, what are our recommendations? So that is how I accepted my report. That is why it is just one and a half page, not to bore you. I know you end up not reading it. If I could have read the thing that you want.
Okay, I think it's fine, condensed as it is. Let's go read it, number, and as we read it, let's ask ourselves if number one, Mr. Sakane does introduce us fully to what was the objective of that concept, Gopak. I'll tell you it's very necessary. You see, Gopak is an abbreviation of a global organization of parliamentarians against corruption. Gopak. You see, corruption is said to be a world cancer. That if you are a parliament and if you are a portfolio committee or public service, you would like to attend anything that talks about corruption. Because you know that there you are going to share views, experience, and strategies to fight corruption. It's very good. It's a conference of parliamentarians. I want to stress this. Because it was very clear, we had fight battles before. As to whether it is necessary to send some ministers who attended this conference, apparently all of the view that it's not necessary to attend the Trans Montana one. The GOPAC as well put as a country and continent chapter. We have indicated that in Africa, the Africa chapter of GOPAC is called APNAC, the African Parliamentarian Network Against Corruption. They are going to have their conference. APNAC is going to have their conference in the next year and will participate as this portfolio committee. As a country, we are supposed to have our own chapter, the South African chapter of parliamentarians. That has not yet been established to a minute, but in no time we'll do that. Next year, the National Biennial Conference of GOPAC is taking place. We will participate in that conference. I think it will be around Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. So that's by way of indicating as to what this will be. It's very important. So let's actually establish there and also you check when you read the report whether the background is fully provided. If not, let's try to actually indicate, of course, looking at the observations and the findings and what actually we have to put forward as well. Thanks, Mr. Kata. And I think there's a question that any of us was, or you were just introducing the report. So, thanks. Let's look at this head on. The next item I'd like us to call is let's look at the minutes. We have probably 4 minutes. How many minutes do we have? This issue of minutes, colleague, because you find that in the majority, not the majority, in the majority of cases, as always, I mean, we're not sitting here as a portfolio committee to liberate one issue at the same time. That you will say, no, it's not valid. It's documented here and there. It's a question of if we have a debate, let's, like for instance today, we have a real debate on memorandum of understanding that FICA has with other entities. They did the presentation. The minutes will be done on the idea of presentation and and then if there is anything as a way forward, I'm something noted, I'm just writing, you know. Everybody writing the minutes of today's meeting. It was noted that there was a problem of communication. And that resulted in a situation, and then the committee asked us to investigate and to come back. I mean, those are some of the things. I'm saying this, that it's something that a committee section needs, that we need to have a minute, and also ourselves, so that we don't miss out on some of the things that we recommend. But we're not going to get into a situation where we even correct the grammar. It is necessary to check if you are trying to be absent when you know that you are present, because when at the end of the year we adopt the annual report, and you say no, you are present at the meeting, and we take the minutes and find that you did not correct the minutes, obviously we're not going to intercept that.
we would have received by the minutes, because what you adopt the minutes, you adopt the minutes because you are free of the minutes. Everything goes by the presence of the minutes.
The management of poor performance. If we are going to
to deal with that issue, and it's a one-day event, and it's taking place there. The reason that is taking place, like we have said, is that you don't want to have this one-on-one talk between us and the PSV and the PPSA and stuff like that. But you also would like to have a feed, I'm sure, to have the service of this video that you offer. So we cannot take them all from all over to come here. If we go to one court instead and then have them come up on it. But the item on management of poor performance, I think one day may not be enough interest to actually have all those things on that day. So I'm just submitting that we're going to keep out that one of management of poor performance. We'll put it somewhere. Now, the second page on the 24th of October, we also have the 24th of October and the 31st of October. We also have those items in our annual program. But what is necessary is the question of stressing a need to prepare effectively ourselves. We need to prepare as a committee. We are going on the 24th to have, it's something like what we had, was it early this year? Yeah, early this year. Yeah, when we went to have quarterly performance overview, when we called all those departments that had qualified annual reports, and we also called the Office of the Auditor General to be there to do that. So it's like a cluster approach to doing oversight on consistency, I mean not consistency, well, consistency. On committee work. Look, there will then be performance profile of each and the submissions. We're going to actually look at all those departments that fall under that class. So the kind of preparation that we need to stress today, that needs to happen. Is that we're going to assign a member or two or so members to actually lead the preparation. When we talk of patients, disability cluster, some of home affairs, some of patient security, correctional services, what else? Defense, that's defense for land. We are talking about those ones. Now, we need to approach our preparation such that we then say as a committee of the institution of public representatives. What is the view of the public on those issues? So there's a need actually to have a paper by one of us or two of us here exploring the performance profile in as far as that is concerned. So we're going to have a discussion to prepare those members who are going to do that. And it will be good if you have a paper that is not prepared by one person coming from one party. You can then say the major parties, obviously we will then say we need two from the main party and the second main party. So we then say go and prepare. If it comes with specific issues, indicate what from the side of the people, what are the people saying about the performance here? So that we are going to share that information at the deciding station. When the cluster is with us. The same will apply on the 31st of October. We are going to look at the economic transformation cluster. Economic transformation, we are talking about minerals and energy, finance, public enterprises, and all those departments that fall under there. We know what our white papers are saying in all the areas. We know what our white papers are saying in peace and stability. We know what the state of the public service report says. In as far as all this is concerned. We know what the strategic plan, multi-year strategic plan of all those departments say. We have annual reports that will attest to performance of departments in those areas. So we can be able to consolidate that into a thing. And we also do computer work, I take it, all of us. So we will then be able to come out and consolidate a picture in terms of saying this is exactly what the people are saying in our preparation. So we're going to assign people also there. It was just, for that one, we're just stressing that we definitely have to do that. For the 7th to the 8th of November, what you see there on page 2, that was not there. We are then saying that we started the year with a strategic planning session, like we did last year. Last year, we wanted to close the year with an annual review.
so that we look at what we set ourselves to do as a portfolio committee. What has actually been done, the impact it might have had in dealing with issues of oversight of the portfolio committee. Then decide as what are the things that one fix as a priority for the following year. We did not have that. We did not have time last year to do that. So we are actually making a provision that we do that on the 7th and the 8th. And when we do that, it will be critical that we start as early as possible now, so that you don't go and get, for instance, if you would need the services of a guest speaker. You don't get a guest speaker, you will be informed that certain only two weeks before they left, because that actually may become problematic. You need somebody who can actually look at our program, analyze everything, what we need to do, do an assessment in terms of what actually is going on around us, and lead us on that item. So that is what we may need. The other item that appears on the 15th of November was not there in our annual program. This was targeted study call. We are putting it that we, as a committee, get ourselves divided into two groups and go on a study call to look at issues of public service oversight in progress. You see, we say that we are a central committee of some sort. When we do, more especially when it comes to policy-related issues, at a national level, there is a portfolio committee which also, at a technical level, works closely with the public service commission. You are then able to then say you do have an instrument of oversight at the committee level across the board. You do have an instrument. As to how sharp that instrument is another question. Now, what we are suggesting we need to do is to go to the provinces just so that we get to understand as to whether they have those kind of arrangements, or if they have those kind of arrangements, how effective are they there? There are some provinces where you find that they do have committees like ours. Others call them premier committees because it's located in the premier office, but it's a portfolio committee. Now, it's a question of how they actually operate there and how we can actually find ways of making aspects of what they do. We also suggest we also interact with metros and districts, because they also do have oversight responsibilities there. There are oversight committees that, in terms of the Municipal Structure Act, they have to be established to deal with issues of oversight. To then check out, they do those things, so that it will make life easier in terms of our coordination at a legislative level across the three spheres. So that is what we suggest, that you need a study talk. It's a targeted study talk. You're not going there to just be there, but you're going there because you need to be informed about what's going on. So I'm proposing that those groups, as they are there, should be the ones who will represent us. On the 21st to the 25th of January, as you know, that we were supposed to have done an inspection on service delivery improvement plan as part of our annual report. But because of preparations, the Department of Public Service and Administration and the Public Service Committee, they regarded this as a very important part of work that they said we need to have a thorough preparation. We constituted the steering committee to deal with that. I reported at one of our last meetings. But the steering committee did not have enough time to look at defining what the inspections and how the inspections are going to be focusing on. So we suggest that we do that during the week of the 21st to the 25th of January, and we divide ourselves into the groups to do that. On the 28th of January to the 1st of February, we suggest that we undertake a study call to deal with public sector. Is it public sector coordinating by any chance, or is it public service? Public service.
the PSPDC. Here we are saying it's a study form. It's necessary for members of this portfolio committee to know what is going on in the PSPDC. So this study form will include interacting with component bodies of the PSPDC. It will also have to include as a committee being taken through in terms of the basis for the establishment of PSPDC. Our labor act. It will be necessary during that study talk to know as to what are the collective agreements that have been entered into. What is familiar to all of us as public servants and as public service committee is resolution. Resolution 7 is so common to all of us. But if you have Resolution 7, it means you have Resolution 1. It means you have Resolution 2. It means you have Resolution 3. What are they all about? We had a situation during the public sector worker strike. As a portfolio committee that day, you need to come in and say something. You need to come in and say something. There's nothing that you can say. You have to bring a form and say, no, this is what we do in terms of what the government is doing. As to whether, at the level of oversight, you believe that all is actually going on as it ought to be, you are paralyzed. So getting to know in a study call, in terms of what happened, will first of all empower us to understand. So that even when we have to defend, because defending we have to attack, even when you have to defend, you don't just turn yourself into a group. You actually talk about things that you are well concerned. So we will be taken through. If the Minister will have time, then she will be one of the people who are going to set up to actually lead us in that understanding in terms of the study tour. So that is what we suggest we need to do. So that will be a one study tour by the committee dealing with those things. And we're suggesting that the strategic planning workshop for next year is going to be on the 19th to the 20th of September. We'll have had the state of the nation address then. I'm told we'll have had the budget piece there. So that is what we're suggesting. We have to do this revised program and to code it. Now let's look at the budget. We're not going to talk about figures. We then had to code it. What we were informed, which is always problematic, but we were frustrated. We're not going to talk about that. We were frustrated for our approach to get our last meeting. What we were told was that committees were told that the consolidated fund budget was depleted. And now we're told that the consolidated fund budget is undepleted or depleted, whatever goes on. And therefore, we are supposed, if we don't want to understand, we are supposed to even recall some of the activities that we wanted to do, but we took out because we could not do them due to budget constraints. So we could not, for instance, look at a situation where we say, let's now go back and send the three members that we wanted to send to Italy for the GOPAP conference, because the GOPAP conference, Excellence Montana, has come and gone. We cannot go back and then say, we go back to Asia. Instead of sending one member, we regret to sending the three members that we wanted to send, because the AIDA conference has come and it is gone. So we have to look at the key issues that form the base, the core of our operating as a portfolio committee. That's why we included this targeted study and study talk and this targeted oversight and stuff like that. So that is what was presented. The budget, when we were told like that, it was like you have to do that and submit it by yesterday. So that has been submitted and stuff like that. So
with presenting this to the committee so that we look at all those things. That's what informed the revised program. You will see in November, we did not put March. November is not quite aggregated because we might actually have a very passive month in November due to other processes that are the other activities that have been taking in the country for activities. So that is it, members. That's our advice for them. If there is something that is left, the members of the team may need to identify. Because if all these committees that have to revise their budget and their program, and you find this is what actually gives rise to so-called consulting just now. Because there is no budget item in terms of our budgeting system that is consulting. You end up in a situation where you consolidate funds because you have some committees not planning activities. So you find that the money then is pooled together into a fund called consolidated, so that those portfolio committees that may be having programs, but they don't have the necessary means, they can actually tap on those resources. So if there are things that want to also include here, let us not be limited by this thing.
But it's guaranteed that everything that is in this program will be covered by the budget.
Yes.
I wanted to raise an issue which might be offside, but it's at some point it could find space. It could find space in this process. We still in a fairly public with it has already been surveyed to the media by the CPS. I just wanted to check that there is an indication as to when it is likely to come to the committee, so that we could consider if it becomes a big deal. What was in the media was suggesting that it was going to come sometime.
Okay. It is at the cabinet level. It is most likely, according to the DKSA program, it's most likely to be tabled around May in Parliament. So it will be a Parliament issue after the financial year. In our program, the draft program of next year, which we're going to consider as the annual review, obviously then that becomes a dominant issue of the dominant issue. So yeah.
Thank you. With just for a moment that information, I'm not sure whether the state of the public service
We did consider the state of the public service report and we had our aid with it.
a round table.
No, I'm not talking about it.
Okay.
But I thought you were talking about the other occasion in this meeting, but now come.
Okay. But let's look at that and see as to. Because I also was of the view that what was supposed to be coming on was the TSC meeting us in the state of the public service post the review, which is what we have decided to shift further because the other committee has not got to it. The report was not yet available. But if it's the state of the public service, the 2020 state of the public service, and wanted further action on that, I think we need to do that as well. Then it will mean we have to analyze the issues they raised when they presented the report to us. We have to ask, of course, they presented it at a joint, at the round table. Although it was poorly attended, our own round table, because beyond the committee, it was only the portfolio committee on education. And another, I think it was just two. The other one was presented, that was justice. The fifth, yeah. So it was poorly attended. But that one of the public, of the department organized by the TSC itself, we have not yet considered it, but I'm not sure as to how effective that was. But you see that then? So we're going to look at that and let's take it forward. I think it's good that you're a quick one. We need to put it on the issue.
What is it that the commission
was reporting
yesterday?
That would be on TV. I saw that, but I just came in the middle. But it was Parakin. There was a report, apparently, that was just by Parakin.
From the public service commission.
From the public service commission. And that report is the current one.
Yes, not
the
secret here. It's not the
same thing.
I said we haven't
the secret.
Okay.
Alright. Now we'll see that it which means some committees are vigilant, you know. they get this report. I saw that interesting. Okay. Any other thing on the program? If there's anything that one suggests, just suggest we should do that. Otherwise let's go for that.
Getting old for my good. Two things in two one. Okay, there's something in the computer. Oh, no, I guess it's okay. Yeah. I need to make some coffee for you. Oh, I'm going to take a break. She's got it down at the bottom there.